Okay, welcome to our podcast video thingy here at Beter Einders. This is the chest of Johan Erasmus sporting my hashtag Betsies, where Nelson Mandela is having cook and tea with Tani Betsy Verwoerd. And then Skuld there is Truth to the Max, looking at Max de Pria, Afrikaans liberal. And he was an Afrikaans liberal before it was cool to be an Afrikaans liberal. It's very easy to be one today, but he was one when it was actually quite tough. So I know some of you might prefer us to stay on our chest because we are both renowned for our chiseled bodies. This is a podcast type thing. So we're gonna chat. And what we're gonna chat about briefly is just the Brackenfell incident. And I guess like everybody else on the internet, we have an opinion and we wanna give some clarity, and we've titled this From Brackenfell to Brandvlei, because Beter Einders recently did something at Brandvlei, and we think that whatever we think of Brackenfell, we need to think about it in connection with Brandvlei. So, Skolky.
Sorry, you just said Brackenfell, I like that.
Yeah, Brackenfell, yeah, let's merge them. Brackenfell, what happened there?
Yo, you're catching me on we're doing this in English, ne?
Yep.
Rave.
I mean, yes.
You're catching me on a weird spot because every day if you ask me what happened at Brackenfell, I'll give you a different answer. The very first time I saw anything about it, if you ask me what happened, I would have said these EFF hooligans, het alweer went again and stopped kids from learning, and they looked for trouble, and this time they found trouble. And I would have been chuffed because I'm tired of public bullies and that and that and that. If you put the name fighters in your name and on your head, you're gonna get a fight. So my first answer, what happened at Brackenfell, would have been the EFF got what they were constantly looking for, and the Afrikaner in me had a fair dose of satisfaction with that. That lasted for a good day, and then, as with everything in my life, I had to settle down and check my DNA. And what happened there, I still don't care about the matric farewell, if it was white and all those stupid details. The issue is, if you ask me today, there's racism at Brackenfell High School. For some reason, the EFF got involved, and then the parents revealed why there's racism at Brackenfell. And they kind of, in their reply to the EFF, no matter how much we like it when fighters get a fight, the EFF exposed something, and the reaction from white people fighting in the streets, the whites and some friends, that showed that there's merit in the problem. So again, with everything, EFF probably messed up, but they exposed something that I think's there. And it's not about human rights. So what the other side and the frustration from the white side, I think is very valid to explore, besides just me making jokes now about how I felt about the EFF. The deeper stuff that made people react in a way, we have to talk about it because it's real, and we can't be politically correct and cute and just talk about, oh, racism is so bad, it has to stop. There is another side that's a reality, a lived experience in the white body. Brackenfell, big chaos, violence because of alleged racism and reactions and actions and reactions. So there is racism at Brackenfell, like there is racism everywhere in our country. And it was exposed, and it is being exposed, and a lot of other chokhas and nasty things are being exposed at the moment. So it's a nice spotlight on our cultural.
I've got no love lost for the EFF, and I'm very suspicious of many of their claims and what they do. I mean, if you think of the three racial incidents, those who at least made it to the headlines, they were Clicks in Senegal and Brackenfell, and the common denominator there is the EFF. So I do think that they are a party that can only be relevant as when they highlight race and racism. So yes, they will be opportunistic and they will jump onto these kind of things. But to think that that's the end of the story and the end of the matter is also deeply naive. So I mean, we've been in race conversations, Kolk, for a long time. And the one thing that our black friends tell us over and over again is that Cape Town is the worst. Like, there's racism in Limpopo, and maybe, you know, some of those Afrikaners are hardcore, some of those farmers are problematic, but they said they'll take that any time of the day before Cape Town. And I didn't believe it at first. I thought maybe it's just a political thing because the DA is in charge there. So maybe they're just trying to get a stab in there. But I have had many of my black friends who are not politically motivated, not loyal to ANC or EFF or anything like that. And they pretty much sing the same song, that there is there's a racism that is evident in the Western Cape that they do not find in other places in South Africa. So, I mean, I don't know the specifics of Brackenfell. I just saw these parents behaving very badly. But I do know that Brackenfell fits into a story that many of our black friends claim is really unpleasant, to say the least.
Yeah, you're making me smile because I'm almost going to say it's the difference between white Afrikaner and English white racists. With you guys in Pretoria, at least you know there's Johan, he's white, he's Afrikaans, and he's racist, and everyone knows where's the starting point, because we moved away from the Cape. So the Afrikaners, even, I think, that stayed in the Western Cape, maybe they're still under the British banner there, and they learn to be posh like their British friends and neighbors. We're stereotyping, so they'll be very angry, all my friends in the Western Cape, but they have a higher level of civility and they're the posh South Africa. They're little Europe in South Africa. And so racism, I think, there is the same as everywhere else, I think, but it's just veneered with a layer of politeness and the typical things Biko and them would warn us about liberals that act as if they're so morally high. But so I would say racism is the same everywhere. But okay. In the Western Cape, it's just packaged like private school a little bit with some poshness and money and politeness, where in Limpopo and Pretoria, you don't get the politeness to hide the race. So I think it's the same everywhere. Yeah.
Well,
I'm surprised some attack happened in the Cape. I didn't think it would happen there, in fact, because I would thought they're too clever for this.
Yeah, that is bizarre to see these sort of wine drinking connoisseurs just, you know, running around with their asachaya. It's bizarre. But Skolk, I think in terms of perspective, I received a lot of WhatsApps from friends asking me, what about the racial polarization in South Africa now? What is going on? And on the one hand, I am not overly concerned for a number of reasons. The one is, I think we need to understand that that's how the EFF remains relevant. On the other hand, there are a few things that's happening around the globe. People in America is more divided than ever. People in England are more divided than ever. People in Spain are more divided than ever. We live in a divisive time, and there's lots of reasons for that. For example, we've got our echo chambers. The algorithm on YouTube only sends me stuff that reinforces my point, so I don't engage with the other side. We engage with other people, well, not actually with other people, just with other ideologies via our mediated social media or whatever. So that might be a reason. So if people think that things in South Africa are so bad, we are more divided than ever, everybody claims that at the moment. It's all over the world. And I'm not trying to minimize our issues here. I'm just trying to say a little bit of perspective might be helpful at this stage. And also, the economy is struggling, right? So I always feel like when we don't make as much money and people are struggling to survive, then certain racial things are highlighted. And in a country like South Africa, where there's such a massive gap between rich and poor, and the poor looks pretty black, you're always going to, it's never going to be far from the surface. Does that make sense? Like we can do all the Rainbow Nation conversations, and I'm very passionate about that kind of stuff, but if we do not try and address the massive poverty and the fact that that poverty is predominantly black, this is always going to happen.
The economy is part of it, but I don't think that's why it's popping up. I think there's every day maybe 10,000 incidents of racism, or 10 or 100,000 of incidents of racism every day in South Africa, that if we put the spotlight on it, it could go viral and be the national conversation for a week. So it's literally pick your example out of thousands in every town, every day. Normally it happens in December when we're all on holiday because we're lying on the beach, we're not working, we've got a bit of booze in our system and we have leisure time. And then we learn about Spiny Sparrow or this one or that one. And it happens in early Clifton Beach sheep slaughter. But we don't talk about the 50 people whose head have just been cut off in Mozambique. Those lives don't really matter. But South Africa, we have linked to our leisure time. We talk about race. And it's never, this one is the nice first one where it's really proper. Okay, now we're getting there. Normal, it's not a microaggression or a subtle exposure of someone's tweets. This one is getting to the point in the confrontation. But I think with COVID, we've been on December for a whole year. So we've had a lot of time to look for what's wrong. So pick any day. The racism is there. It's a massive problem. It's about when does it grab our attention? And it grabs our attention when EFF acts like hooligans and it brings out our bigger racism because we've got black stereotypes triggered by the EFF and it explodes. So it's the same pattern always. For the conversation, I think this time what makes a difference and what we must talk about is why do white people go over now to physical violence? And why aren't they not apologetic? Why didn't they care about the moral high ground? I read some very nice Christians in the newspapers talk about, oh, the parents lost the moral high ground. They don't give a hell about the moral high ground. They, hulle is gatvol. So I think they, if I can intro maybe, that when you tell people to slant terug the whole time, eventually they're going to slant terug. So white people, right or wrong, are at a point where they feel victimized. That's why we make the victim movies. Where they get told to slant terug. When they get told they're under threat, they're under attack. And as Afrikaners, especially as a little bit as a primitive tribe, when you press our buttons in a certain way, we're going to react.
We're not as sophisticated as the English.
We're predictable and it's not other people like EFF really that's been pressing our buttons. It's our own prophets. And we know them. But they've been prepping us for this. So they're doing what the Oaks on TV and the media has been telling them the whole time.
So that's not a bad point. What did the Vryheidsfront say about this? Because they slant terug. Are they happy now?
I don't know if this is what... I've always wondered what their slant terug looks like, which started with Tony Leon and the DA, actually. So the slant terug, the genoeg is genoeg, it's the same at Senegal, whatever. The talk is very fighting talk the whole time. That's why I said something in me smiled, because the fighting talk Afrikaners or whiteys and the fighting talk black people, they're meeting each other in the street, and they're meeting each other. They're not meeting each other at a Betrainer's real talk. So the discourse is being enacted now on the streets. So sorry to confess, but there's something in me that okay, both of you.
I think where I probably disagree with you, Skolk, is that I am not as cynical about, I think we've made a lot of strides. I think there's a lot of goodwill. And I also don't think it's healthy. I'm not saying that you said that, but I don't think it's healthy to teach people to look for racism everywhere. Because I think there's enough incidents for it not to just be constantly on the look for some sort of microaggression. So if we train people to see the world as, you know, I don't know, white supremacy or patriarchy is going to get you, or all of that, then you're like a guy walking around with a hammer and you're going to see things. And I think that's why I don't like this conversation when it happens at sort of a WITS center for ethics and diversity or in the university space, because it's very academic and people are trained to see various things. And I don't think that's healthy. But in as much as ordinary people are doing stupid stuff on a daily basis, I think we can shine a light on that and try and work on ourselves. But I do just want to shift this and to a more positive way direction, in the sense that there's a lot of good happening in South Africa, and a lot of people are, you know, sort of disillusioned with the South African project and the South African idea. But if you talk to somebody who left the country, I actually spoke to a guy recently who left the country in the early 2000s, late 90s, there somewhere, and came back, and he said, "Man, you guys don't know what progress you've made in terms of a growing black middle class. We always complain about, just look at how that is dilapidated." But he's just been making comments about infrastructure development. So there's a lot of good that's also happening, and unfortunately, that's never going to make the news. But probably the thing that I'm most proud of, and us at Beterenders at the moment, is what happened in Brandvlei. Brandvlei is an area, and there's do we call it a township, I guess, which is south of Johannesburg, there, Kreersdorp, that direction. And there was a farmer, Kobus Herter, and man, this guy is unashamedly Afrikaans, like struggling with English, you know, more than us. And he's just passionate about farming. And there were a bunch of small-scale farmers that Doc Mabila organized, because Doc, who's also part of Beterenders, has had a relationship with these guys for a long time, and all sorts of cool projects and soccer stuff.
What you don't know is the top farmer there that you've been working with, because I wasn't there. I think he's, I'm not going to say his name, but the top farmer that you've been interacting with, he's been 2 years, I've been there a lot, he's my friend, but he's radical EFF. So on my Facebook, some of the harshest EFF, like critical, screw white people, you guys are bad, go back to Europe type of stuff, it's been him.
What?
So I've been wanting to unfriend him for months, because he's just so constant. And I thought, oh, you're going to Brandvlei and you're going to work with him. Okay, let's see how this plays out. So for me, just in terms of the timing, that while EFF is doing that at Brackenfell, I've got friends that's also EFF, but they're not just striking EFF. They're people, firstly, with certain aspirations linked to EFF. And look what they're doing in Brandvlei, as EFF people even, and compared to EFF in Cape Town. So it's even a comparison, not just between different realities, but different EFF expressions. If you talk about economic freedom fighters, you could ask which fighter was fighting for economic freedom on that day, the one in Brackenfell or the one in Brandvlei. So it's just another layer that I don't think maybe you know.
I did not know that at all. I didn't pick up
Ken Williams and Nail Skulk on Facebook.
Hectic. Yeah, because that was definitely not the vibe. We took a commercial farmer there, and there were about 40 or 50 members of the community, and they got their training, and I stood there and really enjoyed myself and interacted with all the guys, and there was a lot of appreciation. We gave them these farmer starting packs that we want to roll out across the country at the moment. So, I mean, that's a good lesson, Skulk, because we think that you've got good people and bad people. There are just different kinds of people in this country, and you must just hang out with the good people. But it appears to me, from the story that you just told me, that there are good approaches and bad approaches. And you can get the same kind of people, and with a different approach, they're going to be swinging fists in a particular setting, or they're going to get their hands dirty and work the ground and get excited about the prospect of cultivating some sort of business, agricultural business there in Brandvlei.
Yeah, whether I'm just not, and that's where I confess my conservative nature, I'm just not into the toy toy type. So I don't want to defend the right to toy toy in front of a school. I want to be naughty and say during exams. But whether it's them doing that in Brackenfell or whether it's the Boere toy toying in Senekal, I'm again, that's not my style, and that's why it leaves a bad taste in my mouth. Where if you talk about the stuff you guys did in Brandvlei, literally getting your hands dirty, working, growing stuff, building relationships, building capacity, feeding the nation, black and white together, for me, it's a total no-brainer. So those who want to protest about protests and follow that agenda, because you'll be chasing the EFF tail from Cliques to Brackenfell to everywhere. They might be good in it, but that's their agenda. And I think the beauty about Beter Einders is we can chat about it, but to contrast our approach. And we want to set an agenda, even though Brandvlei will never reach the news on the same day as Brackenfell. That's the stuff that I'm passionate about, care for, and want to give my life to, is farming together, growing food together, learning about each other. That's not naive. That's, I think, very pragmatic. It's not cute. It's real. It is what it is. So the contrast is great. And I think that's where Beter Einders want to play a role. So I'm not, apparently the EFF is going back on Friday. So I can't imagine which type of person is going to say, come, let's go and confront them on Friday. It's round two. I can't see that. Because violence creates violence. And it's funny for me how a big part of my tribe steps in that. But your point and your transition in the talk is let's look at the good stuff. Building and growing and eating together. So how do we get that to be more popular and have old people read these stories rather than the things that make us depressed and angry? We don't know, obviously. That's why we've got like 500 fans and no membership. we don't know how to sell the good life, but I think we do have a hunch about what the good life is and fighting for a better, not fighting, sorry, working towards a better end. We know what we believe in. I just don't know how that can be a better example than Brackenfell.
Yeah, I think the point is just that although many people were hopeless and discouraged when they interacted with these racial incidents in the last few months, whether it's Cliques or Senekal or Brackenfell, I can honestly say that I've just been encouraged in the last few months, because I just so happened to find myself on the ground quite literally and seeing the goodwill between two groups of people that are supposed to be on opposing sides of this battle, you know, commercial white farmers and poor upcoming emerging farmers. So to me, that's very encouraging. Can I use a stupid quote that might be cute? But in Brackenfell, they threw each other with mud. But in Brandvlei, we felt that when you throw mud at each other, not only do you get your hands dirty, but you also lose a lot of ground.
Ooh, that's deep. Write it down and put it in as a slide. no, but just the idea of planting together versus throwing and beating each other, beating the swords into plowshares. The contrast is just so big, and I suppose that's why we had to have this talk. Also, just before Brackenfell happened, a random teacher, which I don't know, phoned me and asked me to, on 22, whatever, January next year, to come and work with their school and take a whole day to speak to their teachers about racism. So, and I know that school, all their policies are perfect. They don't have funny stuff about hair. They'll say they're very Christian. But they proactively, the school knew from where they're coming, they still had a white culture. So all the little things in Brackenfell that was never discussed properly and that led to this point, there's a bunch of other schools even in the country like this one.
It could happen anywhere.
They got me in and say, let's work on this. So to be pragmatic again as a school, yes, racism is there. That's why I'm saying, let's not argue, is the school racist, yes or no? Let's assume the school's racist. And let's talk about how we fix that. And I said yes to strangers next year in January. to talk about these difficult things. And that's a much better way, I think, than hitting each other on the streets like hooligans and telling our kids that they must grow up like that. I mean, gee, how embarrassing. But the school asking me to work with them on their racism proactively won't reach the news. You aren't going to Brandfly, won't reach the news. The British media that likes to put an ad, an article about white thugs in South Africa, they won't feature these things easily because human interest stories are just too soft. Where if we beat each other, it's news. If we work together, human interest and soft. So
let's try and live lives that will not reach the news.
That's a better quote than your previous one. I'll say with that. Let's live lives that won't be newsworthy, because in this country, newsworthy is the Bushiris and funny stuff.
Yeah. Cool. Let's wrap this thing up. Do you want to say something inspirational? Because I'm running out of quotes.
I want to say, let's live lives that won't reach the news.
Wow, that is so original and profound. Skulk, cheers.
Lekker. Bitter einde.